We are holding on your tests on the bays 9 lines from bottom. Okay. We mentioned in the Mishnah that if a person pledges dmei yodai, the monetary value of my hand or arm or however we define yad exactly, so we have to figure out how much a person is worth with and without that hand. So how do we do that? We said that that's a chumra in nedarim over erchin, namely, as we learned before and as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, that if a person were to say, I pledge the erech of my hand, that's meaningless. As opposed to, if he says, I pledge the dummim of my hand, then it means something. So we have to figure out how much he's worth with that hand without. How do you do that? So Rava said you do the same kind of evaluation as you do. Suppose that somebody had chopped off his hand, which is nezek, and that he caused him a headache, and therefore you have to evaluate how much he was worth, how much he was worth with a hand versus how much he's worth now without a hand, and the guy pays the difference. Abaya says that's no good, because over there you're dealing with the guy's already been mutilated, so therefore that tends to affect the evaluation as we do it now. You know, people look at him, they see now he's missing a hand. It's hard for them to evaluate what he was like when he had a hand, as opposed to over here, he still has a physical hand, while obviously not going to chop it off for this purpose. So therefore, Abaye says what we have to do is we have to figure out how much it would be. Suppose this guy was sold as a slave with the deal being that this one hand is still reserved for his previous owner, and his current owner can't have him do any work with his hand, with that hand, and then he pays the difference between that versus if somebody were to buy an Eved where he's entitled to everything the guy does.
Why do we substitute the owner's value to the person's value?
What do you mean the owner's? We're talking about how much would the person be worth if he were being sold. Right, how much he would be worth.
More worth to yourself than you know.
But we can't evaluate. If you're worth to yourself, you're worth an infinite amount to yourself. You can't do that. You have to figure out how much a person is worth at market value. No, so again, in the case of the hand being chopped off, everybody agrees what you do is you figure out how much was he worth as a worker or a slave or whatever you have, or whatever you want to call it, with two hands versus how much is he worth with one, and then you pay the difference, and then the master pays the difference. Over here, Rava is saying you use the same method. Abaye is saying that's no good because the fact is he has two hands. So
number one, it's no good. Number two, it's incorrect because let's say this guy, when he had his hand, was making $3,000 a month, just to give a number.
Yeah.
Right? So he would, and he was 20. You would have made $3,000 for the next 60 years.
That's something different. So, right, well, that factors into nezek. When we talk about nezek, what we're figuring out is, where that's what we're doing. We're figuring out, in other words, let's say the guy was going to be sold as a slave, where his life expectancy is, like you said, 60 years, and during that 60 years, presumably the owner would have gotten 60 years worth of work out of him at X number of dollars per year. That all factors into it.
What are we using here?
Again, Rava is saying we do. Abaye says the problem with that is, psychologically, when you're evaluating the guy as far as Nezikin, you already have, as the Gemara said before, as Abaye used the expression, Gavra Zilohu. He already is mutilated. You look at him, you see that there's something missing. Therefore, when you're calculating the difference in value between before and after, it tends to depress the value that you would have put on him when he had two hands. Because, in other words, it's hard to mentally imagine. Right now, we see a guy in front of us with only one hand. It's hard. It's a little harder to mentally imagine, well, what if he had two hands? How much would he be accomplishing? We tend to evaluate things based on how they look in front of us right now.
There's two things you're saying. There's a measure, how much he lost, and the Erech, how much he's worth now.
Okay, one second. We're not talking about Erech here, first of all. We're talking about dummy. All right. In the case of Nezek, what we would do is, how do we calculate it? There, everybody agrees. We calculate how much is he worth in terms of earnings potential and whatever with two hands versus how much is he worth with only one. And the Mazik pays the difference, and that's the Nezek.
But one second. When you say we evaluate how much he's worth with two hands, as Erech, as dummy?
No, as dummy. So over here, Rava is arguing we use the same method to figure out how much his hand is worth. However, Abaye says the difference is that there you're talking about the guy has already lost his hand. Here you're talking about he hasn't, and therefore that makes for a difference in evaluation. When you look at a person and you're evaluating his worth with two hands, his earnings potential and everything with two hands versus right now when he's standing in front of us with one hand, it tends to come up. You tend to come up with different evaluations in that way.
Yeah.
So therefore, Sabaya says that won't work. Therefore, Abaya says we have to use a method of evaluation that assumes that the guy still has two perfectly healthy hands. However, one of them is unavailable for work for the new owner, for the new master, because it's reserved for the previous master. And that's how we figure out the difference. That's what Abaya says. Because that's the Abaya says that's the only way to do it.
Imagine, let's calculate. Let's say with two Abayas, right? How much it's worth with one hand or two hands today?
Okay, that's what Abaya is saying. You're not considering if his hand is chopped off, like Rava is saying, like you do by Nizikin. What you're doing is you say like this, and we said this yesterday. If you're selling this person as an eved to somebody else, if both his hands are available to do work for you, then he's worth $1 million. If only one hand is available, you can only have him do work with his right hand. Any work that would involve his left hand is off limits to you because his left hand still belongs to his previous master. Then let's say you're only going to be willing to pay $500,000 for such an eved. Okay, so then the value of his left hand is $500,000. That's what Abaya says, how we do this. Now, so Rava asks, in accordance with his opinion, that you do the evaluation the same as you do for Nizikin, which, as we said yesterday, that Rambam does not paskin that way, that Rambam paskin that we follow Abaya's view of the matter, maybe because since Abaya points out to Rava that his way doesn't really work, and we don't find Rava defending his position. We find Rava using his position as a basis for a series of questions, but that could have been before Abaya contradicted him. We don't know. Anyway, the point is, so Rava asks, based on his position, that you do the same kind of evaluation as you do for Nizikin. So Rava asks in that connection, Amduhu Oymed Shal Nizikin. Suppose you have, let's say a person was injured and his hand was chopped off. Suppose then that they've made an Oymed, they made the evaluation as you do for Nizikin to see how much the Mazik is obligated to pay. And then at that point, for Omar, then this person whose hand was chopped off said, Domai Olai. He says, I obligate myself to pay my value, my monetary value to Hesh. Mahu, what would be the din? Do we need another evaluation? Me, Omar, Ha'amdu, Chodazimna. Do we say, well, look, we just evaluated him to find out how much he's worth now in terms of future earnings potential as far as Nizikin. Therefore, that also works as an Oymed, as that also works as an evaluation as far as Domim, as far as his Neder of Domim. Oydilma, or maybe not. Shiny Umdana, Debe Asara, Mu Umdana, Debe Tuasa. Maybe not. When it comes to Nizikin, you only need a basin of three to evaluate him. When it comes to Elchin or Domim, you need 10 people to evaluate him, of which, actually, the Mishnah mentioned at the beginning of Sanhedrin, Rashi brings it over here. You have to have 10 people, and at least one of them has to be a Kohen. So maybe it's not the same thing. He was evaluated by three people as far as Nizikin. Maybe he needs to be reevaluated in his current state by 10 people, of whom one is a Kohen, in order for it to work for Domim, or maybe not. Once an evaluation was done, then it's good enough. You're going to answer maybe yes. You're going to say that yes, you would need a new evaluation, because just because three people evaluated his value doesn't mean that 10 people would come to the same conclusion. Well, then, what about the other way around? So now let's take another possibility. What if a person says, I obligate myself to pay my domain, but I'm due, and you had 10 people evaluated and came up with a figure? Because of Omar Domai Alai. And then at some later point, he says again, Domai Olai. Mahu. Now, does he need a second evaluation for that? On the one hand, we had 10 people evaluate him. That ought to be good enough for the future. Or maybe not. Maybe we have to assume maybe he increased in value in between. And therefore, maybe we have to do a new evaluation. What about another possibility? How about, let's say he said Domai Olai, they did not evaluate him at that time. Shitim Okubesis brings another gears over here with another Imtim Talayma, that's part of this series of Imtim Talayma, if you're going to argue that he might have increased in value in between. So what about another case? Omar Domai Olai Veloy Amdu. Suppose he says Domai Olai, they didn't evaluate him at the time, because of Omar Domai Olai, then later on he says Domai Olai again. Mahu, now what's the din? On the one hand, we could say we definitely just evaluate him once, and then we double that value, whatever we find is worth right now, because we didn't evaluate him the first time. So of necessity, we're just going to evaluate him now once, and then pay double that. Maybe not. Since the two Nedarim were at different times, maybe we have to do two separate evaluations, one for each Nedar. But okay, he made one Nedar last month, let's say, and we didn't evaluate him. Now he made another one this month. Okay, maybe we have to evaluate him now and then again, and then again tomorrow or whatever, in order to have, we need a separate evaluation for each Nedar. So you're going to say maybe that, okay, well, yeah, he made separate nedarim, one after the other. Therefore, we should have to evaluate him twice, once for each neder. What about another possibility? What about if he said, at one time, I pledged to pay twice my dung? Oh, I forgot that Rabbi Levin Shear is here tonight. Let's continue where we were. Okay, so again, so we said, the last thing we said was, suppose that the person says domai olai, and then later on again he says domai olai. The question is, does he need two evaluations or only one? So imkin tzolayma, that he needs two because it was separate nedarim. So we said, what if amash shnei domai olai b'vasachas? What if we were to say at the same time, I pledge to pay twice my dom? On the one hand, we could say, well, he made two nedarim at the same time. He said twice my erech. Therefore, he only needs one oimed, one evaluation. But on the other hand, he said two times my domim. Therefore, kazeh hazeh domim. Maybe you could argue it's the equivalent of kazeh hazeh.
Right.
Because he said two. And another question, amduhu me'elav mahu. What about if they evaluate, if they just evaluated him just ad hoc, without for no particular purpose. Suppose it happens, let's say a person punked had 10 people over there, let's say one of them was a kohen, and for whatever reason, it just happened randomly that they decided to evaluate his monetary value. What would be the din? Mahu, what would be the din? Is that valid if shortly after that he were to say, domai olai? Would we say, okay, he's already evaluated, so we don't need a fresh evaluation? Or maybe we need kavana for this evaluation. Maybe it has to be done for the purpose of evaluating him as far as domim, and this one wasn't, because it was just done just then. Tosfos actually mentions that we have in front of us on the Gemara, this one is not preceded by Imkin Tzoloiman. So it has nothing to do with the whole series of questions before. The reason why the Gemara is putting it in this series is just because we have a series of questions about the Oymed for Erchin, so therefore the Gemara stuck this one in also, even though it's not directly, it's not tied to the other ones with an Imkin Tzoloiman. Okay. So what would be the din? So the Gemara says, "Show it to me a choda." Okay, well, you should at least be able to answer one of these, Dichnan, because we learn in the next Mishnah, "Domai olai v'mes." If a person says "domai olai" and then he dies, "lo yitnu yoshim." We said that yoshim are not obligated to pay his domim. "She'ein domim l'mesim," because mesim have no domim. Now, "v'isachadai d'chamdu me'elov havu umdona." Now, if you're going to tell me that an oimed, even when it wasn't done for the purpose of domim, is still a valid oimed, then ha'omid v'koi, then we would have to say there is at least some kind of oimed over here. You should obligate them to pay something, because after all, mi'ika gabrid l'shoy aboz, l'shovi aboz zuzi, because after all, you don't know, every person is worth at least four zuzin, which was the average day's pay for a worker in those days. And even if the guy is very weak or sick or what have you, he has some monetary, some value as long as he's alive. So therefore, so the fact that the Mishnah says that they don't have to pay anything implies that we say an oimed that was not done for the purposes of domim is not considered an oimed. So there we would have the answer to that at least. However, the Gemara says that's not a proof because amduhu me'elav nachus b'umdana, because you could argue there's a difference. When amduhu me'elav, at least there was an evaluation. They didn't do it for the purpose of domim, but they actually figured out how much the guy is worth on the market, as opposed to domai alai lo nachus b'umdana. On the other hand, if he says domai alai and then he dies without them ever having made an evaluation, they never even made an evaluation. Yes, we could say that logically the guy must have been worth at least four zuzin, but nobody ever actually sat down and evaluated that. So therefore, you could argue that not necessarily does it prove that in that case that an oimid without intent for domim would be considered a valid oimid. Maybe, maybe not. Okay. In practice, all of these questions are based on Rava's understanding, which is that the oimid for that, well, not all these questions, but the beginning of the series of questions depends on Rava's idea that the oimid depends on that the oimid is the same kind of oimid as for nizikin. And since the Rambam paskens like Abaya, that it's not, but it's a different kind of oimid that we figure out how much he'd be worth as a slave, with or without a hand or whatever in our Mishnah, and the same idea. In other words, when it comes to regular domim, okay, the truth of the matter is actually...
Even though he's not a slave.
Right, obviously, but no, okay, the truth is actually a number of these questions could be valid, even al libur d'hilchos, because the machlokes Abaya and Rava is only about if the person said, yodi olai, if he says, domai olai, we know we do evaluate him. Okay, the question could be valid, but Amman actually doesn't bring any of them halacha or say teiku on it or anything. So maybe that Amman understood that it is all based on Rava's idea of how we do the omer. And since he passed them like a bias, like a bias view of how we do the omer, then maybe he held that they're not relevant. I don't know.
So
he passed them like a bias that in a case where a person says. That you don't do like nowadays. That if a person says "may yodi alai," you figure out how much he would be worth as a slave when both his hands can be used versus when the master can have him use only one hand.
Why do we evaluate him as a slave? Not a slave.
How else are you supposed to do it? You need some kind of objective value of the guy's worth, and that's a way of figuring out an objective value.
The objective value is how much he was worth before you had his hand cuts or whatever.
Okay, but. Fine.
And he was a merchant making $100,000.
Again, so then will you talk about, okay, but you talk about, in other words, as a slave, in other words, how much would somebody be willing to pay for that person's, for all rights to that? Because that is how you figure out the actual monetary value of the labor that he would be able to do. Okay, how does it work in a slave market? You're buying a person, you're buying the labor and whatever that he can do for you. So yes, if you have a person who's more capable, who's capable of doing more things, or whatever, then yes, he's worth more. If he's capable of doing fewer things, then he's worth less. Yes, that's how you value it. How else? I mean, how else are you supposed to do it? How else are you supposed to have an objective value?
Some amount of money a year when you're not a slave. That's the prime definition of what you're worth.
And again, the point is that therefore somebody else would be willing to pay. Somebody else would be willing to pay you, or your owner, or whatever, that amount to buy that labor of yours. In effect, what you're doing is you're figuring out how much is the guy's labor worth. Okay, Mishnah says, Chomer be'erchin mi'minadarim. On the other hand, so we learned in the previous Mishnah that you have a chomer in the dorim over erchin, namely that if a person says Dmei Yodah Yolai, it means something, but if he says Erech Yodah Yolai, it doesn't mean anything. On the other hand, there's a Chumra in Erech in Ohu Nedorim. Take that. How is that so? Ha'omer Erech Yolai Umes. If somebody says, I pledge my Erech, which is a fixed amount, they're Umes, and then he dies, Yitnu Ayoshim. His Yoshim are obligated to pay it, as we'll see in the Gemara 1. On the other hand, Domai Olai Vames, on the other hand, he says, Domai Olai, and then he dies, Lo Yitnu Ayoshim, then his heirs are not obligated to pay it, because, like we said before, Ein Domim Lameskin. Dead people have no dom.
That's also something he said it before he passed away.
The fact of the matter is, right now, right now he needs an evaluation. We need to be marich. We need behemida lifnei koyin. We have to stand them up in front of the koyin. One point is the Rosh points out in Shitim Kobetzis is that a dead person is also bana. You can't even say, for example, that his dead body would have a certain monetary value. Actually, Shitim Kobetzis brings that idea, but argues with it on various grounds. But there's a few different reasons why not. One of them is because you need behemid beherich. You need to be able to stand the person up in front of the koyin and evaluate, and he's dead, and you can't do that. Okay, she'ein domim l'meisim. That's why, because meisim have no dom. Right. The one idea is that Tosfos Yom Tov brings, and the Shitim Kobetzis brings this idea, but disagrees with it as the reason behind this, because a mess is also bana. And then there's another reason that's brought is because you can't be mamid umarech. You can't stand them up in front of the coin. Okay. Erech yodi v'erech ragli olai. Suppose a person says, here's another kula. If a person says, the erech of my hand or the erech of my foot is obligatory on me. Loyam makum. So what he said doesn't count for anything. There's no such thing. Hello? No such thing as an erech for a hand or a foot. On the other hand, Erech Roshi, the Erech Kvedi, a lie. On the other hand, he's going to show the Yonah Masechta. If he says, I pledge the Erech of my head or the Erech of my liver, Noisen Erech Kulay, then he has to pay his entire Erech. Zachal, this is a general rule. Dava Shana Shama Tloya Bay, if it's an organ that life depends on it, like his head or his liver, Noisen Erech Kulay, he said, then he has to pay his entire Erech. So therefore, any part of the body, that any part of the body that's vital to life. Chassi Erki Olai.
Let's say to the musician.
What about?
And he says Erki with my hand. He says my hand.
Erech Yodi means the Erech, the fixed values that it says in the Torah. There's no fixed value in the Torah for a hand or a foot. That's dummy. We learned back in the first parak. Rab Meir would say that if a person says Erech Yodi, then he has to pay the domim of his hand, because Rab Meir holds Ein on a mercy dvarav l'vatala. We're going to talk about that in the Gemara over here. That a person doesn't say meaningless neder, and therefore instead of Erech, he must have meant domim. The Chachamim over there disagree and say that no, it's meaningless, and therefore he doesn't have to pay anything at all. There's no such thing as an Erech except for a complete person. Domim is one thing. Erech is based on the complete person. So it doesn't matter whether he's a musician or not. If it's something that's vital, then nidun b'kvoidoy, as the expression we had in the first paragraph. Otherwise, not. Yeah. Okay. Chassi erki olai, chafam an alef. Chassi erki olai, if he says, I pledge half of my erech, okay, no, it's in chassi erki, he pays half of his erech. So if he's a man between 20 and 60, for example, he's paying 25 shekels. On the other hand, erech chesmi yolai, but if he says, I pledge the erech of half of me, noisen erech kulay, then he has to pay his entire erech, because half of his body is a double shana shama toya boy. A person can't live with only half a body.
Well, it depends which side.
No, well, we're going to see in the Gemara, but the Gemara assumes, for example, that even, if the leg is chopped off above the knee, it's considered to be fatal, which in those times it was. I mean, you know, okay, we have an opinion in Chulin, we have the opinion, I think, of Reb Shimon, who said that you could cauterize it and the person could still survive, but cauterize means you burn it. You burn it in order to seal the blood vessels, but the Chachamim disagree with that. And for example, with an animal, if the leg is missing above the knee, it would be trafe. And by a human being, it's a similar concept. Okay. Yeah. On the other hand, chatsi domai alai, if a person says, I pledge half of my domim, good, noisin chatsi domai, he pays half of his domim. So if he's worth, if he's worth, and again, we figure out his worth by figuring out how much he could be sold for as a slave, because that gives an objective measure of value, an objective measure of how much would somebody be willing to pay right now for this person, so taking into account their possible future earnings and so on and so forth. So if he says, I pledge half my domain, noisim chati domain, so you have to pay half his domain, dmei chati yolai. And on the other hand, if he says, I pledge the domain of half of myself, noisim dmei kula, then he has to pay his entire domain for the same reason, because domain you also go according to Eva Shana Shama Ployabai. This is a concept that we learned earlier in the Masechta called nidon b'kvoidai. That when you have, when a person pledges the domain of some vital organ, then we say it extends to the whole body. So they have to pledge, they have to pay the domain of their whole body. Again, Zachal, the general rule is, Davashana Shama Ployabai, an organ or part of the body that is essential for life, Noisin Dime Kuloi. If a person says, I pledge the domain of that, then he has to pay the domain of the entire thing. Another case, Ha'omer Erto Shal Ploini Olai, what if a person says, I pledge the Erech of so-and-so, Nes HaNodir V'HaNidir, what if now, afterwards, before they had a chance to pay it, the one who made the neder and the person who was the subject of the neder both died, Yitnu HaYoshim, the Yoshim of the Nodir is still up to pay, again, because it's a fixed amount, as we're going to see in the Gemara, Domo Shal Ploini Olai, on the other hand, if a person were to say that I pledge the domim of so-and-so, umes ha-noider, then what happens is, if the noider dies, yitnu ha-yoshim, his yoshim still has to give it, because the nidir is still alive, and we can still do that. The nidir, therefore, still has domim, he still has monetary value, he has a market value, we can stand him up in the marketplace, and sell him, and then sell him as an eved, and we can have the koyanim evaluate him, etc. Metanidr, on the other hand, if the nidr dies lo yitnu ayoshim, then the yoshim of the nidr don't have to give shein domim lo meisim, because as we said before, meisim have no domim. Again, either because they're also b'hano, or because practically speaking, nobody's going to buy them as an eved, and you can't evaluate them by the koyin, etc. Okay. So there's more sorts of. Turn around, we learn in a braisa. Choyma bin nidorim mib'erchim, there is a chumra in nidorim, meaning of domim, over erchim. Number one, shana dorim cholen al behema chayvois. First of all, a neder can be chal on an animal, on a domestic or a wild animal or a bird. You can make a neder. I'm giving this animal or this bird or whatever to Hestish, or as a korban or to Bedek Abayis, as the case may be. The in nedarim behestig yad. Another chumra in nedarim is no concept of hestig yad. We've learned already, in particular in the previous parak, the concept that if a person makes a neder, that if a person pledges an erech and he can't afford the entire erech, so the kohen will figure out how much assets he actually has minus certain things that they leave him to make a living with and whatever, and then he has to pay, and then he pays the rest, and then he's kosher, that's hesed yad. So that doesn't apply to domim, though. If a person were to say that I pledge, we're going to learn on Amud Beis, if a person were to say, for example, I pledge the domim of this animal, he's responsible for the entire domim of the animal. Mashenkin, be'erchin, as opposed to erchin, where you have hesed yad, and erchin, whom you apply to human beings. Chomer be'erchin min nedarim, on the other hand, you have a chomer in erchin over nedarim, kesad, how does that chomer? Omer, as we said in the Mishnah, Omer Erki Olai Omer, so the person said, I pledge my Erech, and then he died, Yitnu Yoshim, we say his Yoshim have to pay the amount. On the other hand, Domai Olai Omer, but if the person said, Domai Olai, and then he dies, Lo Yitnu Yoshim, then the Yoshim are not obligated to pay, She'en Domin Lo Mason, because Mason have no Domin. Let's figure out what we just said. We said, Omar Erki Olai Umes. We said if a person says, we said in the Mishnah and the Braisa, that if a person says Erki Olai and he died, Yitnu Yershim, we're saying the Yershim have to pay. Now, why do they have to pay? Shmamina Milval Peh Gozmina Yershin. Does that tell you that even if you have a verbal loan that's not written down in a document, which is the case of a year, nobody wrote down that he's Chayav of the Erech, or that he's Chayav of the Erech. The pastor...
Yoshim responsible.
Yeah, so you have, we've talked about this earlier in the Masechta. The main place the Gemara talks about this is at the very end of Bava Basra. The basic question is whether Shibuda Daraisa. Do we say that there is a Shibud, that there's a lien created on the property of the person who owes the money, such that that lien is now transfers to his heirs, and therefore you can collect from his heirs? Now, the halacha actually is that Shibuda is Daraisa. Therefore, you can collect even a milval peh min ayoshim. However, the Gemara over here is assuming, according to the opinion, the Gemara over here is asking, you have a machlokes about it at the end of Bava Basra. On the face of it, our Mishnah would prove that you can. Because otherwise, it's a milval peh. If you were to say Shibuda is not daraisa, then why are you collecting a milval peh from Yoshim? The fact that you do seems to show. The fact that the Mishnah is telling us, and right. The Braisa is telling us, Erki Olai Umes, which is a milval peh, and you're still saying that the Yoshim have to pay, that should prove that Shibuda is daraisa.
and that would answer the question in Bava Basra over there. And yet the Gemara, and then yet, I mean, Halacha may be that way, but the Gemara doesn't bring. But the opinion that says Shibud Lav Daraita is not. You have to be able to explain our Mishnah somehow. The answer is Shiny Halacha is different over here. The Milva Ksuva Batardi. Yes, but the difference is over here that after that it's a Milva that's written in the Torah, which Rashi in other places explains, we learned this in Bechoras in particular, that the definition of a milvah ksuva b'tora is where it comes about as a result of something, it doesn't necessarily come about as a result of something the person did. The Torah is mechayev to pay a certain amount. Tosfos in various places asks on that. On the face of it, that doesn't fit over here because it comes about by him saying, I pledge an erech. So therefore, Tosfos and some other Rishonim explain that milvah ksuva b'tora would mean the Torah mentions a fixed amount that the person has to pay. In this case, you have a fixed amount. The Torah mentions, we learned that, for example, in connection with Pidyon HaBen, where the Torah fixes the amount, 5 shkolin. Here, the Torah fixes the amount, depending on age and gender. So therefore, it would be considered a milvah ksuva b'tora. Okay, but the question is, Shmamina, are you going to prove from that milvah ksuva b'tora ksuva b'shtar dam? Yeah. Are you going to be able to prove from that then that if a milvah is written in the Torah, it's the equivalent of being written in a shtar, which itself is the subject of machlokes in Bava Basra and in the first parak of Amasekta and in Bechoras and in other places. Whether a milvah ksuva b'tora is considered like it's a milvah b'shtar or not. On the one hand, you could say the fact that the Torah that's written in the Torah, that he's obligated to pay that amount, that he's obligated to pay, again, according to Rashi, not necessarily based on something that he did, and according to Tosfos, the fact that it's a fixed amount, makes it as if it was a milvah b'shtar, and therefore there is a shibud created, which you can collect from the Yoshim. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe it actually has to be written in a shtar, where it says, Reuven writes, I owe Shimon X amount.
To be what?
For it to be a milvah b'shtar, and for there to be a shibud. If we're saying over here that a milvah ksuva b'tora is considered a milvah b'shtar, then again, the opinion that says that not has to be able to explain our mishnah somehow. In other words, if we were to say that shibuda is not daraisa, and we would say it's only drabanan, and we would say that the drabanan only imposed it where there's a shtar, well, if you hold that way, and if you don't hold that a milvah ksuva b'tora is ksuva b'shtar, then how are you explaining our mishnah? Why are the yoshim obligated to pay the erech? The answer is, yes, but we could say that the Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about where he actually was, wait, 1 second, it's not so obvious, hold on, where he actually stood in Beis Din, and they made him, they obligated him to pay X amount. Well, then, 1 second, well, in that case, the parallel case where he said domai alai would also have to be the pashtus. We would assume that the only difference between them is one is an erech and one is domim. But other than that, we would assume that we're talking about the same scenario where he was in Beis Din. In that case, amai lo yitnu yoshin. In that case, why are the yoshin not obligated to pay? Why are we distinguishing and saying are not obligated to pay? Why are we saying they're obligated to pay in the case of Erech, but not in the case of Domin? If we're talking about that he wasn't yet Omer Badin, then according to the opinion that Milvah Ksuva B'Torah is not Ksuva B'Shar, and Shibuda is not Daraisa, then the Yoshim shouldn't be obligated to pay the Erech or the Domin. And if he was Omer Badin, he should be obligated to pay both of them. Why are we distinguishing that Erech, yes, Domin, no? The answer is Domai Olai Mechosu Domin. Yes, but the difference is when he says domai alai, still you have to have an actual evaluation. You have to you can say, let's say, for example, that Beis Din told him you're obligated to pay, but now we have to still get together a panel of 10 people, including at least one Korean, to actually figure out, okay, what's the amount of domim that this guy is worth? And we didn't have a chance to do that before he died, so therefore it's too late to do that now. As opposed to erki alai, like Mechosav Alaikum. When he says erki alai, all we need is for them to tell, yeah, there's nothing to value because we already have a fixed amount, so in the Torah. All we have to have is Beis Din telling him you're obligated to pay. And therefore, once that happens, then that's enough to make the Yoshim pay as well. Because then they already told him, in other words, in the case of Domin, Beis Din told him you're obligated to pay, but we don't know yet how much. And now that he's dead, it's too late to figure out how much. As opposed to with Erechim, once they tell him you're obligated to pay, all we have to do is look in the psukim and know automatically how much he has to pay. Yeah. Now,
even if you don't.
Right. Now, the Rambam writes over here, as far as the Pesach Halacha, the Rambam writes over here this business, that when do we obligate them to pay the Erech when Oman Badin? The Ravid argues on that. The Ravid says this is all on the assumption that Shibuda loved Doraisa. Given that Shibuda Doraisa, why does he have to be Omer Badin? And so therefore, so Meforshim on the Rambam explains, the Rambam would explain that Omer Badin over here means that the Rambam is using the phrase Omer Badin a little bit differently than we are in the Gemara over here. It means the Umdana, it means the evaluation. So again, in the case of Erchin, you don't need that. In the case of Domin, you do. So if in the case of Domin, they had actually Omer Badin, in the sense they had actually evaluated him by the board of 10 and said, you are worth X amount, then yes, the Yoshim would have to pay. But if you didn't have that yet, then or that's all Gemara is saying, then you wouldn't have to. And in the case of the Erchin, again, you don't need that. So
that tends to show what?
So therefore, so that's it. No, so the halacha is that Shibuda is Doraisa, and therefore that even a milvah pair can be collected from Yoshim. Midinah de Gemara, you can only collect from land of theirs, actually. It's such a kind of goyim that you can also collect from the talisman of theirs. Then if we sadi el lashafi, is the expression the Gemara says in some cases, you only need edim where one side or the other is lying about it. If it's mutually agreed it's not so obvious.
It's agreed.
No, because you know what? There are, you know what? I mean, we don't have time to get into this right now, but you know that there's a difference between edim birur and edim kiyum. Many things in halacha for which we need edim, they're only edim birur. That we need them to certify that such and such happened. But yeah, if we don't have edim and everybody mutually agrees what happened, it's fine. We don't need edim. Then you have things, for example, kiddushin, for example, dinin nefashis, where the edim are edim kiyum. Without them, nothing happened. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, erech yodi v'ragli olai. We said that if a person says, I pledge the erech of my hand or my foot, then what he says doesn't count for anything. However, Omer Rav Gidol Omer Rav Noisim Damel. Rav Gidol says in the name of Rav, he would have to pay the damim of that hand or foot. And we would calculate the damim of it, as we said before, like a buyer or like rabbi. The question is, what do you mean? What do you mean? The Mishnah says what he said doesn't count for anything. What do you mean he should have to pay the damim of it? The answer is, the Mishnah said, loyam akum, meaning, in other words, if he says the erech of my hand, then it's meaningless. So what are you telling me he has to pay instead the damim of his hand? The answer is, loyam akum l'rabbanan. Right. What the Mishnah means is loyam akum means according to the Rabbanan, the noisin the male or the mayor. But according to the mayor, we learned in the first parak we have in Machlokas where the Odom Moisi Dvarav Vatala, where if a person says erech of my hand or my foot, Rab Meir says he has to pay the damim of it, and the Chachamim said it doesn't count for anything because Rab Meir said ain't on the Moisi Dvarav Vatala. So therefore, it's the same. The Chachamim say because they say Odom Moisi Dvarav Vatala. Fine, a person can make a neder which turns out to be meaningless. So therefore, the Chacham don't have a problem with that. So therefore, actually, I mean, the actual Machlokas in the Mishnah over there rather wasn't about Yod or Ragli, rather it was about the case where a person says, I pledge the Erech of a baby less than a month old, where there's no Erech for them in the Torah. The table of Erechim begins in a month old. So Rav Meir had said he has to pay his Domin, and the Chacham say he don't have to pay anything. Same thing over here then, if he pledges the Erech of his hand, then Rav Meir would say he has to pay the Domin of his hand, and the Chacham would say he doesn't have to pay anything.
I think Rav Meir says it.
Because your mayor would say, Ein Adam Motzi Dvarav Vatala. The person made a neder, it has to mean something. So if it can't mean Erech, then it has to mean Dom. Since a baby under a month old doesn't have an Erech, we have to assume that instead he meant Dom. And therefore we make him pay Dom. Okay. So that's what it is. So Rav Gidol is saying, Noisin Damer, according to the mayor. Where the Mishnah is going according to the Chacham. The question is, Ha'omer Chodazimna, why do we need Rav Gidol to tell us that again? He already said that once. The Omer Rav Gidol Omer Rav, we already had in the first parak in that connection. Rav Gidol also said in the name of Rav, Ha'omer Erech Kli Zeh Olai. If a person says, I pledge the Erech of this utensil, where utensils don't have an Erech, because only human beings have an Erech, Noisin Domov. So he says, according to the mayor, he would have to pay the Domov of it. So that's the same thing over here, as the Erech of his hand or his foot. Why does he have to repeat that? The answer is Mao de Tema. Yeah, but you might have thought like this. Hossam who do Shane Erech Laki. In that case, you could argue a person knows that a Kali doesn't have an Erech. He knows that Erech can only apply to human beings. Therefore, you could say the gum of Omer L'Shem Dom. So therefore, according to the mayor, you can assume that maybe he really meant he meant Dom. He expressed himself inaccurately, but he meant that he's going to pay the value of this Kali. Aval Hocha Mita Katari. Over here, you could argue that he's actually making a mistake. He's actually misinformed. Gesavar, he might think he hecha the ikka erech roishi the erech kvedi. You could argue that just as there is such a thing as an erech of my head or the erech of my liver, and as we said in the Mishnah, then he has to pay the erech of his entire body because davar shana shama fluyavoy. So you would think, ikanami erech yodi ve'erech ragli, maybe the person doesn't realize the difference between a vital organ or not. So he thinks that there can be an erech for individual organs, such as a hand or a foot. Avod may like Amar, you could argue, even Rav Meir would not say that in that case he means may. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav Gittel wants to inform us, Rav wants to inform us, and Rav Gittel quotes it in his name, that nevertheless, even in that case, Rav Meir would hold that he has to pay the dhamim of it, and the chachamim would hold he doesn't pay. Then we said, Erech Roshi ve'erech Kvedi notes in Erech Kolor. We said, if he says, I pledge the Erech of my head or of my liver, then he has to pay his entire Erech. My time. Well, why does he have to pay the entire Erech? Nefoshes kamarachmona, because the prophet uses the expression, the Erechon nefoshes. And the word nefoshes, we learned. And in the first parak, we had a long braisa over there, in the second parak, actually, I think it was. We had a long braisa that Gaushin, the phrases in that pasuk, and we learned different dinim from it, and one of them was that from nefashos we learned that anything that Dabashana Shama Tluya by it counts as the whole thing. Then we said that Klal Dabashana Shama Tluya by Chola. We said the general rule is that any Eva Shana Shama Tluya by, then you have to pay the whole thing. So what does that come to? Whenever we have a Zach Klal in the Mishnah, usually it comes to add something that wasn't stated. Last Suya, I mean, how Kubo Lamaila comes to include also the leg above the knee. Again, like we were saying before, in halacha, we assume that if the leg is amputated above the knee, then the person will be a trefa, just as with an animal, it will be a trefa. Again, nowadays, you could argue, okay, maybe with modern medicine, the person can be saved, so maybe nowadays it's not considered davashana shama tluya bari.
Can you just trefa to the halacha?
Because, no, there's a difference between, for example, hilchos trefas are unchangeable, but over here, no, it's not. Hilchos trefas, as far as whether an animal is trefa or not, that doesn't change. The Rambam stresses that very strongly in Hilchos Shechita, that even if modern medicine tells us that a certain animal with a certain condition is viable, salvageable, it doesn't matter, and vice versa, even if they tell us there's a certain condition which is fatal, but it's not on the official list of Shechita, then it doesn't matter. However, when it comes over here to the definition of Davashana Shamat Loyaboy, maybe not. Maybe it depends on what's in the Shamat Loyaboy depending on the current state of medicine. Okay, maybe not. The point is, the Mishnah is telling us that Davashana Shama Tloyaboy, La'asuya min ha'akubo la'mayla, that comes to include the case where the leg was amputated above the knee. And Tosfos says, obviously, that would include various other kinds of treifas as well. The reason why we're mentioning that one is, again, because we had Reb Shimon saying in Cholin that even by an animal, that wouldn't be a treifa, because it is salvageable. You could cauterize the cut end, and the animal would stay alive. So therefore, nevertheless, the Gemara wants to tell us over here that our Mishnah does not hold like Reb Shimon in that regard.
Okay. And
the halacha is like a chamim as far as treifa is concerned. Then we said chatsi erkiolai noisin chula. We said if a person says I pledge half of my erech, then he pays half of his erech. So turning up, as opposed to if he says erech chatsiolai, if he says the erech of half of me, then he has to pay the erech of his entire erech because half of his body is a vital organ. So turning up on him, we learn in a brayta chatsi erkiolai. If a person says I pledge half of my erech, noisin chatsi erke, he has to pay half his erech. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, I remember Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says, loike v'noisen erech shalom. He is loike, which usually means he gets malchus, and he has to pay an entire erech. The question is, loike, am I? Why is he getting malchus? What did he do wrong? I'm going to pop a loike v'erech shalom. So the Papa says, you're right, it doesn't mean he gets malchus. It means he gets penalized. The word loike literally means like a person is damaged or harmed or something. So it means, in other words, he loses out in that he has to pay the penalty in that he has to pay the entire erech.
By saying
I pledge half of my erech, Rabbi Yosef Behuda is saying automatically he's chayav for the entire erech. My timer. Now, why should he? Why, according to Rabbi Yosef Behuda, would that be the case? Because gzera chatsi erki otu erech chet. Because Rabbi Yosef Behuda thinks. It says the Chachamim made a gzera and penalized him that he'll have to pay the whole thing because saying chatsi erki is very easily confused with saying erech chetzi. There's not it's the same words, it's been flipped around. Erech chetzi, have a davashana shama tloyaboy. Now, if he were to say erech chetzi, he would be chayev as an entire erech because chetzi, half of his body, is a davashana shama tloyaboy. Therefore, if Yeshi, the Behuda holds, will make a gzera. Even if he says chatsi erki, we're going to treat it as if he said erech chesi because we don't want people to be confused. We don't want them to be underpaid. So Chum disagrees with that. So according to him, he'd only be chayiv in half, but midrabbanan, we're going to make him chayiv in the whole thing. Whereas the Chachamim and our Mishnah don't agree with that. Okay. Then we said chatsi domayolai. We said if he pledges half of my dhamim, same thing. So we said same thing. We said if he pledges half of his dhamim, then he pays half of his dhamim. If he pledges the dhamim of half of me, then he pays the whole thing again because half of his body is davashan hashama for you, right? My time, why is that? Because neder be'erchecha nefashos is. Because that same pasuk that mentions nefashos that we said before also mentions the word neder, and the word neder refers to domin. So we see that there's a comparison between a neder of domin and erchin in that regard, which we learned previously that by both of them we say that when you're talking about a vital organ, then the same rules apply, and it applies to the whole body. Whether it's a neder of domin or whether it's erchin. Either way, he's paying the entire thing. And again, Zachal Davashana Shama Floyaboy. Again, the Mishnah repeated the rule in this case in connection with Dhamin, that if it's a Davashana Shama Floyaboy, you have to pay the whole thing. And again, Masuri Minah Kobola Maila, again, those words of the Mishnah come to include, let's say, for example, he pledges the erech of his leg above the knee. Same thing, we assume that to be a vital organ, and therefore he's higher than the erech of his entire body. Tanan Abanam, Yulun Abraita, Hamarich Chasi Erech Kud. Suppose a person declares that I'm going to give the erech of half of the erech of a keli. So let's say you have a keli which is worth $100, and he says, I pledge half of the erech of that keli. Now again, kelim have no erechin, because erechin applies only to human beings, so what does he have to pay? Reb Meir Omer Noisin Domov. Reb Meir says he has to pay the dom. Yeah, consistent with what he said before, that you have to pay the domim of the keli. Where the Chachamim say that he doesn't have to pay anything. Now, the question we're going to have is, why is the Braisa phrasing it in terms of a half a keli? The same machlokes would apply to a whole keli on the basis. So the Gemara tells, Rava Cholosh. By the way, Tosfos mentions, they say I don't like the Girsa Chatzi Erech Kli, because the Gemara is going to talk about soon the question of whether it's normal to give such a thing as an adava. There's no reason a person might not give half of the value of a keli as an adava. Rather, Tosfos says the correct gusa over here should be erech chasi kli. What if he says, I pledge the erech of half of this keli? So then we can talk about it. It's not normal to give, it's not normal to pledge half of a keli, because half of a keli usually isn't useful for very much. So therefore, you'd have to, that'll come up in the discussion over here. Okay. If a person were to pledge the erech of half the keli, would we say he pays the domim of half the keli, or would we say he pays the domim of nothing? That's Tosfos says, that's the girsa they prefer in the Gemara over here. So the Gemara tells, Rava Cholash, Rava one time was not feeling well. Ul gabei Abaya v'Rabbanon, Abaya and the other Chachamim came to visit him. The Yasvi v'Kamri, and they were sitting and talking Torah. You see from these kinds of stories in the Gemara that even when a person is sick, even when whatever, they always as much as possible, they're always trying to learn Torah. So they were sitting and saying like this. Bishlema the mayor. I can understand why the mayor makes some chayav in the domim of half the tevi, because we said before, kasava ain't on a mercy dvar of vatala. He holds that a person never speaks for vatala. A person never makes a neder of vatala. Therefore, loishna kulo v'loishna chetzi. So as far as they're concerned, there's no difference between whether he says the entire domim of the keli, or half of the domim of the keli, or according to Tosfos as you said, the domim of the entire keli, or the domim of half the keli. According to the mayor, I can understand why it's phrased that way. El Rabbanon my kasabri, but we have to ask, what about Rabbanon hold? According to the mayor, there should be no difference whether he says the erech of the entire keli, whether he says the erech of half the keli, or half the erech, or the entire erech, or whatever. Either way, it would amount to the same thing. But what are the Rabbanon in this braisa? What do they hold? If they hold like the Rabbanon in the first parak that argue with their mayor, and they say that it could be Odom Moti Dvorah Vatala, then Afula Kula Nami. So what's the difference? Even if he says the erech of the entire Kaili, it wouldn't mean anything. So then, because Kaili has no erech. The E ain't not a moti dvar of vatala, and if a person is not moti dvar of vatala, after the chet yinami, then what's the difference? If he says half, then it should be chayav for half. Why is the braisa phrasing it in terms of half a keli, implying that that's the only, or half of erech, implying that's the only case where the chachamim and Rameyah would argue on the face of it? They would argue on an entire keli, either they're arguing on an entire keli or nothing.
could say every single...
No, 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 but that's the point. Why not just say if a person says Erech Kli or Lai? Why not? Why Erech Chatzi Kli? Or Chatzi Erech Kli? Why are you after mentioning a hackney? The answer is, Omelahu Rava Vabaya, or Abaya Varava, it should be, that Abaya and Rava both answered to them, Rava, who wasn't feeling well, and Abaya, who came to be Mvaka Chola, or Rava, it says on the side, Shitimukabasa says that it was Rava said this, Rabbanon de Hocha could have Meir Savrila. Now, what it is like this, the Rabbanon over here do partially hold like Rav Meir. They do partially hold like the mayor of the first pedek that ain't on the mighty dvar of Atala, and therefore his neder has to mean something. So if it can't mean erech, because there's no such thing as erech of a keli or half a keli, then it has to mean domim. But the savri lo could have shimon. But on the other hand, they also hold like Reb Shimon. What is that? Savri lo could have mayor don ain't on the mighty dvar of Atala. So they're arguing with the chachamim in the first pedek. The chachamim in the first pedek had said adam mighty dvar of Atala. Therefore, other mighty dvarim atala. Therefore, according to them, the whole neder is meaningless. Whereas according to the mayor, it has to have some kind of meaning. Therefore, we make them pay the dhamim. The chachamim over here agree with the mayor on that point. But the savri look at Reb Shimon. On the other hand, they also hold like an opinion of Reb Shimon, which we learned in Menachos. We had a case over there. Suppose a person made a neder that I'm going to bring a korban mincha out of barley flour. Now, standard korbanos mincha don't come from barley flour. The only one is the mincha socha and mincha toimer. Everything else is wheat flour. So is he chayev in a regular mincha or not? Reb Shimon says no. He says we make him potter because he didn't make a neder in the normal way that people make a neder.
In the case of the child of lesson.
No, no, forget about the less than 30 days. The point is, therefore, kulei urchalis nadori. So therefore, it's normal to make a neder for the erech, or the dom, in this case, we retranslate it as the domim, of the entire keli. Pauge lav urchalis nadori, but it's not normal to do that for a half a keli. So that's where Tosfos is saying, if you're talking about half the domim of a keli, there's no reason why not. This keli is worth 100, so I'm pledging 50. But if we're talking about the domim of half the keli, people don't normally pledge in a half a keli. Because a half a keli isn't usually very useful. You can get some use out of it, but not normally something that a person would be menadir. So therefore, if Shimon will say, therefore, that can't be considered an adava. Therefore, by combining...
The rationale
is that a person is not usually menadir a half a keli. Okay, and being menadir of a mincha minasorin is also, a person can say it, it doesn't mean anything. Because Shimon is... Fine, the fact of the matter is that it's not normal to, because, well, actually, Tosfos actually uses the expression over here, the hasi kli ein shava klum. Tosfos says that the half a keli isn't worth anything. Okay, so then fine. So by combining together the opinion of Reb Meir and Reb Shimon, you have the opinion of the Chachamim in our Braisa, which is that if he were to pledge the erech of the entire keli, then we would make him chayev in the domim of the entire keli. But because he says, I pledge only half of that, half of the erech, or the erech of the half, as the case may be, then the chachamim over here are saying he's potter.
Units to kill your fault.
Okay, so then it's not worth killing. So then I guess half of it would be worth something. Maybe then they would. Maybe we're talking about a keli where half of it is completely worthless. I don't know. Okay, fine. Okay. Then we said ha'omer erto shall pliny a lie or mess anoyder fuller. We said if a person says I pledge the erech of pliny and then the noyder dies, so we said that the yoshim are obligated to pay the erech. So what do we mean my new? So what's the case we're talking about? Sha'omer bedin, or is it talking about where he already went to Beis Din and they told him he's obligated to pay? Well then hainu ha. Isn't that the same thing as we said earlier in the Mishnah? We already established that we're talking about a case of sha'omer bedin. So what exactly are we adding? The answer is safe, yes, but the chiddush of the Mishnah is safer, it's tzrichalei. The answer is that you're right, that part is not really necessary, it's just an introduction to the safer, and that's the part where there's the chiddush, where we said, dom of shal ploini olai, if a person says, I pledge the domim of so-and-so, umet ha-noider, and then the noider dies, yitnu ha-yoshim, we say then the yoshim are obligated to give. Now, mao detema, because you would think, kiven deloy amduhu, you would argue that since they had not yet evaluated him to figure out how much he's actually worth, loy ishtabud nichsi, you would argue there's no shibud on the nechosim yet, and therefore you can't require the yoshim to anything. Kamash mu'am, therefore the Mishnah wants to tell us, no, kiven de omen badin, ishtabudi ishtabud nechosi. No, because once he was omen badin, and they told him he has to pay, even if they didn't tell him the actual amount, then you already have a shibud on the nechosim. Okay, it's for an unspecified amount. The umdana guluyim. this that you need to do an umdana, which you're able to do on the nidr, because the nidr is still alive and you're able to do the umdana, that's just to figure out the exact amount. That's just to quantify how much they actually have to pay. But the fact that he had to pay was already established while he was alive, and therefore that already creates a shibud on the yershin.
Because
what happened was, so the noider, so Reuven says, I pledge the dom of Shimon. Then we're saying that Reuven, Reuven went to Beis Din, or to the local Rav or whoever, and told him, okay, because you said that, you're going to be obligated to pay. We don't yet know how much, because we don't know how much Shimon is worth, but we'll have to figure that out. Meanwhile, you should know you're going to be obligated to pay. So, So later on, after Reuven dies, then Shimon goes in front of the board of ten, in front of the Tisha of Echamam Koyen, whatever. And they tell him he's worth X amount. So there's already a shibud on the Nechassim, and therefore, even though we didn't know the exact amount yet, and therefore that's going to have to be paid now, even though Reuven's dead. Mishnah says, suppose a person makes a neder, shur ze ola or bais ze korban. Person says, this ox is going to be an ola, or this house is going to be pledged as a korban, meaning for bedek abayis. You don't bring a house as a korban, but it means the value of this house is going to go to bedek abayis.
Bedek abayis just takes the house?
Yeah, they take the house and they sell it. They sell it and they use the money for you.
They can't say they pay the value of my house.
Actually can be he'd have to buy it back from Hekdesh. Yeah, he'd have to be paid there from Hekdesh. So the gizbo would come, figure out the value of the house, and then yeah, he can buy it back. Plus a coin, okay. Then umes asher v'nafal abayis. Suppose now the ox dies or the house collapses before the gizbar got a hold of it. Potter melashalim, he's potter from paying because he said shur zeh or bayis zeh. And at this point, this shur or this bayis doesn't exist anymore. This is the classic difference between neder and nedava. Where neder is harei alai, where the obligation is a chovas gavra on him, versus harei zeh where the obligation is on the chesed. On the other hand, sure they're a lie over, but if he says this sure is an obligation on me as an over, or bais they're a lie carbon, or this house is an obligation on me to be used towards a carbon, nessa sure enough on a bais, then if the ox dies or the house collapses, chayav l'shalom, then he is obligated to pay because he said a lie. So Gemara starts off, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Rav, Loi Shonu, this that we're saying in the Mishnah, that if he says a lie, that makes him obligated to pay, that's only talking about Elod Amar Dmei Shur Zeh Olai Ola. Only if he said, the value of this Shur is an obligation on me to be brought eventually for an Ola. So in other words, he's not being makdish the animal itself, he's being makdish the value of it towards Bedek Abayis, so towards the Korban or whatever. So then we're saying that even if the animal dies, he's still obligated to. He said that because the money still exists. So therefore, because after all, he didn't say domim halalu, as Rashi says. So therefore, yeah, amal amar shurz a lie ola. But if he didn't say dmei, if he just used the expression, which was the actual expression we had in the Mishnah, shurz in the Mishnah that we said shurz a lie ola, then kiven to amar zeh because he used the word zeh umesh, and now this animal died. So we would still say he's not chayav bachuya, say he's not responsible to pay hekdesh that amount, because olai lahavia karma. Because what does he mean by olai? He just means it's on me. I'm accepting the responsibility to make sure that it will be brought. That it will be brought. But if it dies before the gizbo had a chance to get a hold of it, then that's it. He has no further obligation. What about the skin? I mean, okay. So that the fine. Okay, but the point is, in other words, that he said shows they're alive. That's just meaning while it's alive. So okay, maybe you could say maybe you could say he takes the carcass and sells it for whatever it's worth and gives it to the gizbar. Okay, what do we mean by the house? By the way, you don't bring the house to the gizbar. So some of the Achronim say that you're right. In fact, then by a house is not really relevant. Others say okay, it means alive would mean, in other words, it's my responsibility to clear out the house and make it ready for the gizbar to do whatever he's going to do.
You say it would be the house certificate.
Yeah, okay, that too, yeah. Okay, fine. Mace, Gemara says, though, I have a contradiction to that. We learn in a braisa, shur ze oila. If a person says this ox is an oila, so the din is hashur hektish, that ox is now hektish, umoilin boy, and me'ila applies to it like it would to any other kajim.
As soon as he said
hashur ze oila, then it immediately becomes hektish. Mes oinignav, but if the animal dies or was stolen, ein chayev b'achuyosei, he's not chayev b'achuyosei because he said zeh, and therefore that means as soon as the animal is gone, then he has no further achayos. On the other hand, shur zeh alai ola, but if he said, this op is on me as an obligation for an ola, then hashur hektish or morilin boy, also the shur is hektish and me'ila applies to it, mes oinignav chayev b'achuyosei, and if it dies or it's stolen, then he is. One second, but he said shur zeh alai. And therefore, chayev b'achuyosei. So what are you telling me, Rav Chiya Barav, that when is he chayev b'achuyosei, if he says, dmei shor zeh olai, the braita is saying, he just says, shor zeh olai, and he's also chayev b'achuyosei. The answer is, so what? Mi'alimah mas nisim. So what? The braita is no stronger than the Mishnah. Do kimna d'otukama domi, and dmei, and Rav Chiya Barav is explaining that when the Mishnah used the expression shor zeh olai ola, what it really means is that he said dmei shor zeh olai ola. Okay, so in the braita, it can be the same thing. Hachanami, d'kama dmei, the same thing. The braita can actually be talking about a case where he said dmei.
Even though it doesn't say it,
okay, the same way. We have to insert the word into the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah didn't put it, but then the Braisa didn't put it either. But fine. Nevertheless, Rav Chiya Barav is saying that would be the din, right? In fact, Tosfos points out that even in the Reisha of the Mishnah, we can understand that it's talking about Dmei. You have where he says Dmei Shur Zeh Ola, versus where he says Dmei Shur Zeh Olai Ola. Okay. So the question is, Vahomi de Sefer de Ka'oma Domi, but that can't work because in the Sefer of that Braisa, it does say the word Dmei. Therefore, Reisha de Loi Ka'oma Dmei. Therefore, of necessity, the Reisha cannot be talking about where there's Dmei. De Katoni Sefer, because the Sefer of that Braisa continues. Dmei Shur Ola, if he says the value of this ox is an Ola, then the Braisa says Asher Chulin, then the ox is considered Chulin because he wasn't Makdish the animal itself, just the value of it. The Ein Moilin Boy, and Me'ila therefore does not apply to the animal because it has no Kedushas Aguf, all it has is Kedushas Domim. Nes Oinignav, and if the animal died or it was stolen, Ein Chay Bachu Yosei, then he's not Chay Bachu Yosei because again he said Zeh. He said Dmei Shor Ola, yeah. So one second, Ein Chay Bachu Yosei, rather he's not Chay in the Achayas of the animal itself, because the animal itself, what did he mean when he said Dmei Shor Ola? He meant when I sell this animal, I'm going to take the money that I get for selling this animal and use it for hektish. But in this case, the animal died; it was stolen, so he never sold it. So that doesn't kick in. Avo Chay Vachray is Dumav. On the other hand, if he had actually sold the animal and now he has the money, and later on that money gets lost or stolen or what have you, he will be Chay. Because the money itself, there was no zeh with it, and therefore he's chayev. So that part of the braisa is talking about where he said dmei. Shouldn't that mean that in the earlier part of the braisa he didn't say dmei? He just said shur zeh olai, and was saying that the olai in effect overrides the zeh and makes him chayev. And Rav Chiya Barav is telling us that not. How does that work? The answer is. Reisha v'sefer de ka'oma dmei. No, actually, both cases in the braisa are talking about where he said dmei. Reisha de omer yaftish asher l'domav. The reisha of the braisa is talking about where he said that the shur should have kedusha insofar as its value is concerned. In other words, the shur itself was given kedushas dom. You can have kedushas mizbeach, where the animal is kedushas guf, where the animal itself is going to be brought to the korban. In this case, there's kedushas domim. He's saying that the animal's value, the animal's monetary value, is hektish. So that's a lesser level of kedusha, but still me'ila therefore applies to it. So therefore he has a chrayus on it.
Because the
animal itself has kedushas domim. He'd said shur zeh ola, or dmei shur zeh ola was saying, so therefore he had accepted a chayus by saying olai. Because Rashi says the reason is because it's true that he said zeh, but the zeh refers to the animal, but it didn't apply to the domain. So therefore, once he sold the animal, One, the animal itself has monetary value, and therefore that monetary value is responsible for regardless. The Sefer, is talking about a different case. He said, right now I'm not being makdish anything, but when eventually I sell this animal, then I'm going to take the money that I get for it, and I'm going to be makdish that. So right now he wasn't makdish anything. So therefore, the animal itself is still holding. It doesn't have kedushas haguf. It doesn't even have kedushas damim. Therefore, so we're not distinguishing between whether he says dmei or he doesn't say dmei. We're distinguishing between, is he makdish something right now? He's makdish the animal insofar as its value, or is he makdish the future value that I plan to sell this animal for?
What is it?
So the two different cases. In one case, chayav b'achuyos, right? At present value versus future value. Right? So the question is, how does that work? What do you mean? You can't be makdish something that doesn't exist yet. At this point, he hasn't sold the animal yet. The money he's going to get for it doesn't exist. So how is he able to be makdish that in advance? But the money for it doesn't exist yet. That's the thing. If he's going to be makdish the animal for its value, the same way, there's a similar thing. We make a distinction in many places in Shas between, for example, selling the fruit that this tree is going to produce in the future, which is davashayna bala olam, versus selling the tree for its fruit. In other words, I'm selling you the tree, not that you own the tree itself, but that any, insofar as any fruit that comes out of it is going to belong to you, and the actual tree is going to belong to me. The same thing over here. You can be makdish the animals. You can be makdish the animal for its damim, where right now you're being makdish it for a certain degree, versus you have a makdish later, eventually, when I sell it, then yeah. So how does that work? The answer is, Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rab. Okay, you're right. Homani Rabbi Meir. Fine, this bride, so would have to go according to the mayor. Fine, Rabbi Meir says a person could be makdish something that doesn't yet exist. Same way as Rabbi Meir says a person could throw something that doesn't yet exist. You have an example. Rashi mentions an example in Kedushin, which actually is, so it applies not only to Dini Mominis, it also applies, for example, in Kedushin. You have a case, let's say a man says to a woman, I, Hareyat Mekudeshesli, after I become a ger, for example. Right now, he's not able to be Mekadesher because he's still a goy, but Rameir says that works. Once he becomes a ger, then she's Mekudeshin. So we see that Rameir holds that a person can do things that Shaloi Bolaylam. Okay. Ikadamri. Others say that the discussion went like this. Or others say that Romi Bachoma asked a chitta, Kiman, who would this bride be like? That we're saying that we're talking about being makdish the future value of the animal. Would it have to be Kira Meir? Omerlei, and in this version, Abaya tells Rav Papa, or Rav Chista tells Rami Bachama, of course, the Elakaman, who else is going to be like, yeah, of necessity, you're going to have to say, it's like a mayor, because it can't work, according to the Chachamim. The Ika Demasni Law Aha. Then there are those who say that the whole discussion was in connection with the following case. A Braisa says, a maskil bias lachaveh, if a person rents a house to somebody else, v'nisnaga, and then that house develops saras. So what happens? Even if the koyin says that it's confirmed saraf and it has to be torn down, nevertheless, the landlord can still say to the tenant, this house is still in front of you. In other words, it's your bad mazel, basically. I rented you this house is still available, and therefore I'm still keeping my end of the bargain. Tosfos discusses over here, does that mean that he'd still be entitled to collect rent for it? Maybe, because even though the house has taraf and anything that goes into it or anyone that goes into it is going to become tamei, big deal. You could still get use out of it. There's no isser to become tamei with a house with taraf. You're going to be tamei. Okay, you're going to have to go dip in a mikveh. So maybe he's still entitled to collect rent. On the other hand, Tosfos says maybe not. You have brises in other places. Yeah, you have a brise in Toras Koyanim that says that a house with taraf is also to have anah from. So in that case, you're not allowed to live in it. So in that case, Tosfos says, fine, what the Gemara would mean over here is that he's not going to be able to collect rent on it, but Hare Shalach HaPanecha, in other words, I don't have to make another house available to you. I can't collect rent on it, you're right, because you can't live in it, but I'm not obligated to find another house to keep my end of the deal. On the other hand, because the house still exists. Once it's torn down, Chayav Lahamid Leibayis, then he has to make another house available to the guy because now there's no house there anymore. It's not yet. The fact is it's not. In that case, Rashi says it would be the master's, it would be the landlord's mazel. He was choshered al gezel, it's sota sa'ayin, which we learned back and those are two of the things for which Torah abstain comes, and therefore, yeah. And continues the Braisa, Hikdishoi, it's supposed that a person was Makdish, suppose he was Makdish this house, then the din is Hadorboi, not necessarily are we talking about a house of Saraf at this point, but in general, if a person is Makdish a house, Hadorboi Malas Chau Lahekdish, the din is whoever's living in that house has to give the rent to Hekdish. So let's figure out that last case, Hikdishe Hadorboi, what do you mean? Are we talking about that the one who lives there, that the tenant was Makdishit? Hechi must be Makadishit. How is the tenant able to be Makadishit? Ishki Yakdish Beise Kodesh Amrachmona. After all, the Pasuk says if a person is Makdish his house is Kodesh, implying Ma Beise Birushusa Yakol Birushusa. Just like a person's house is in his Rishus, anything else that a person is Makdish has to be in his Rishus. So what do you mean that he was the answer is Hokikom Hikdishe Makdishit? No, what it means is, you're right, it means if the landlord was Makdishit, Hadorboi Malas Chau LaHekdish. Then the tenant now has to start paying rent to Hekdish. So now we have to figure out the reason why we're bringing this in is, again, we're going to discuss this matter of Dabar Shalei Bolo. So the question is, Hikdishe Maskir Hechi Dorboi, if the landlord was Makdishit, at that point, how is the tenant allowed to live there anymore? The Me'ila Kori, at that point, if he's living there, he's committing Me'ila. The two, and not only that, Malas Chau LaHekdish, what do you mean he pays rent to Hekdish? Kibben de Marbe, once he committed Me'ila, we have a general concept, which we're going to learn in Masechta Me'ila in a few months, says Hashem, that once you committed Me'ila with an object of Hekdish, then the object itself becomes chulin. You're now obligated to pay the value of it for the chumash to Hekdish, and then bring a korban asham, but the object itself becomes chulin. So therefore, nafikle schar lechulin. So therefore, doesn't the rent now become chulin? Because the house itself, once you lived in there illegally, then it becomes chulin. Because that's the rule. When you're moil in something, when you take something of Hekdish and misuse it for your own purposes, the din is it becomes cholin. It's similar to the din. It's somewhat similar to the din of the way that a ganav acquires something when he after he stole it. It can be coined with yir, shinu, rishus, whatever. So it's a vaguely similar concept.
On the other hand, how was he able to be master to put the bed if he had a price? So this person, he got money for a year.
Okay, so all it means is, fine, I mean, it means that, why not? He can be
mad. Can't give it away if you will mad this shit, so to say, to this guy for 5 years.
Okay, first of all, there's a concept Hekdish Maski Amidei Shibud. First of all, there's a concept that if you Makdish something, it takes away the Shibud. Fine, second of all, you could say, fine, maybe you have to make another house available to him, but we're talking about what happens with this house. Anyway, the point is, So what is the scenario over here where the landlord has Makdish the house and is able to, but the tenant now is paying schar to Hekdish? So the answer has to be, the answer is, we're talking about that the owner did not say, I'm Makdish the house right now. He says, when the rent is paid, I Makdish that rent in advance. He's not Makdish the actual house, he's being Makdish the rent in advance. So now you have the question, how does that work? The rent hasn't been paid yet, so it doesn't exist yet. How is he able to makdish it? He was where? That's why we're bringing this in, because he was saying this would go. According to the mayor, so that's a third version of where that came in. One version is it was in connection with the braisa that we quoted on Chof Amud Beis. Another one is that same braisa, but we were asking, does it have to go according to the mayor? And we said, of course, there's nobody else it could go according to. A third possibility is it was mentioned in connection with the case of the rented house. And a fourth one, ikadami omelet a papa la baya. In that one also, you have a different version, that a papa says to abaya, but ami lot of mori bachoma, romi bachoma, lot of chitza, keman, who would that braisa go like? Would it have to be like the mayor? Doma odam makdish dabash le balaylam, who says that a person can be makdish something that doesn't exist, omelet, and abaya, or of Chissa says, of course, the Elikman, who else could it go like? You have two different versions, and within each one, you have two different versions, what Braisa, that discussion, was in connection with, and two different versions. Was it just stated as a fact that this Braisa goes according to the mayor, or was the question asked, does it go according to the mayor? And the answer was, of course, there's nobody else who could possibly go like.
Either we asked if it was...
Either we said it was in connection with the Braisa about Shurze Oila. So either we had that there was a statement of fact made, that Rabbi Huda says in the name of Rab, but that's according to the mayor, or it was posed as a question to Abaya or to Rav Chisda, who is this Braitha like? And the answer, was it according to the mayor? And the answer is, of course. Or the whole discussion was in connection with the case of a house that was rented. rather where we said the house wasn't rented, but the future rent was donated to Hekdesh.
So there's three possibilities.
So there's four possibilities altogether. Two braises, and then within each one, was it stated as a plain fact that it's according to the mayor, or was it a question to which the answer was yes, of course it's according to the mayor.
Okay.
Okay.